Before we start our episode today, I want to talk a little bit about a hard topic, fertility. If you are one of the many women struggling to become pregnant again, just know that we're thinking of you and sending you the most positive thoughts. For mamas trying to conceive or struggling with fertility, I encourage you to check out Needed. When the two founders of Needed began their fertility journey, they were shocked to see the lack of nutrition advice provided. Along with creating an amazing line of prenatal vitamins, omega-3s, and other essentials, they offer egg quality support for women and sperm plus for men. These are things that are not often talked about. I wanted to share more about both of those products. Needed's egg quality support is designed to support egg cell health as they develop into mature eggs. Improving egg quality can support fertility outcomes. It's never too early or too late to start focusing on egg quality, but for optimal results, they recommend taking egg support at least 3 months before trying to conceive or freezing the eggs. For Needed Sperm Support Plus, it combines targeted and clinically studied ingredients, pre and probiotics, antioxidants, and botanicals for the whole body approach to male fertility. Expertly formulated for men who are thinking of trying to conceive and for men's vitality at stages of all life. If you are pregnant or trying to conceive, or even in your postpartum stages, consider switching to Needed to get 20% off your order by using code VBAC20. That is thisisneeded.com and use code VBAC20 at checkout. Okay, and this is actually the week that we are kicking off CBAC week. So this week, you'll hear two CBAC stories. If you haven't caught on yet, we have a couple weeks, and every month we have a 1 week with a couple episodes that it is a more specialized episode. So if you're looking for CBAC stories, this is your week, and we have our friend Melanie with us today. Hello, everybody. It's Megan, and I have my friend Melanie with us today. Melanie is a 31-year-old mama of two who had two C-sections. While she struggles with birth trauma from her second birth and emergency C-section, it was still quite healing, she said. And I love that you're talking about that. Like, you still struggled with this, but it can still be healing. That was how I was. I wanted a VBAC. With my second birth, I really, really, really wanted a VBAC, but it didn't happen. It didn't go as planned, and I had a CBAC, right? I walked down to that OR, and I had that second C-section, and it's not what I wanted, and there was still trauma involved and lots of feelings, but it was still one of the most healing experiences for me, and weirdly enough, I think it's what I needed. I needed that to help me heal from birth one and birth two. So let's talk a little bit about CBAC and how it can be as a mom who's wanting a VBAC and it doesn't go as planned. Do you have anything to say on that?
Sure. Thanks, Megan. Yeah, I have a lot of things to say on that. Honestly, like you, you know, I wanted the VBAC. I did all of the things, you know, to try to get that VBAC. I did the yoga and the teas and the stretching and the chiropractor and the acupuncture. I did it all. And it didn't happen. It wasn't meant to be. And I guess we'll get more into that when I dive into my story. But the CBAC was healing because even though I didn't get the outcome I wanted, I was much more empowered throughout the whole process than I was in that first birth. And, you know, through a lot of healing and therapy, I realized that it was that empowerment piece that caused a lot of the trauma from my first birth. So, you know, it wasn't the C-section itself. That wasn't what instigated all of those feelings and all that hurt. But the way I was made to feel, the way I was treated, the doubts and insecurities that, you know, were planted in me from that experience that took away my power. And so even though I did not get that outcome in my CBAC, it undid a lot of that in a way. I was able to kind of regain some strength and some autonomy. And that's lasted a lot longer, I think, in this kind of healing journey. It's still hard. You know, sometimes I still feel like I'm just barreled over by the grief that's wrapped up in both of those births, even though I have two wonderful, beautiful, healthy children. You know, it doesn't all disappear, but it did help me regain a lot of confidence, I guess, in my ability to advocate for myself and know what I'm capable of.
Yeah. I love that you pointed out that it was a more empowering experience and you felt more empowered. And I really think that along these journeys, if we can be educated and feel empowered, even if it doesn't go the right way, and really feel part of our own births, right? Even if it doesn't go the exact way we want it. And that doesn't even just mean cesarean and VBAC. Like, I didn't want an epidural and I got an epidural. I didn't want Pitocin and I got Pitocin, right? There's all these different things that can happen that we didn't want. But if we can feel empowered and involved and educated and like we are making the decisions too, and sometimes we can't make, sometimes our babies make the decisions. And that's frustrating. That's hard because it's like, well, what could I have done? And we go down these real big spiraled spaces. But if we can really feel empowered along the way, I feel like overall, even though we still might not agree with wanting, you know, the outcome of what we wanted, we can feel empowered and have more healing to come. And so I wanted to talk more about that too, because we see this happen in the feedback group where it's, hey guys, thank you so much for being with me along this journey. This group has been amazing. However, I feel like I just have to leave now. I can't be here. I don't feel welcome here because I ended in a cesarean. One, women of strength, I want you to know you are always welcome. You are always welcome and you are incredible. You are not less than anybody else just because you had a cesarean. And two, we actually have a CBAC group. So I wanted to point that out to any mamas who have had maybe gone for the VBAC route or even, you know, decided not to be back and wanted to have a cesarean. Go into that CBAC group. It is so special. It is led and ran mainly by the very own Paige on our VBAC team, who is incredible. And I love that group so much. It creates this just abundant amount of love and support that I think everyone deserves. Everyone deserves. I don't want you to feel alone because I know that I was one of them. When I had my CBAC, I was like, I can't keep seeing these people have these VBACs. I wanted a VBAC. I didn't get a VBAC. You know, there were so many feelings and I didn't feel welcome there. And it wasn't even because they didn't make me feel welcome. I didn't categorize myself as as qualified to be in that group. So yeah, so check out the CBAC, CBAC link community on our Facebook and know that women of strength, you are incredible. Whether you have a vaginal birth or not, you are incredible.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Okay, you guys, we're gonna dive in to Melanie's story. Stories, I should say. There are two stories. So yeah, let's start with birth number one.
Goodness. So my first birth, my daughter, who is about 4 and a half now, she was born in April 2020. So it was right at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic lockdown, which really set the scene in the most terrible of ways, as you know, many of you know listeners probably remember, especially for anyone who had a baby during that period. I mean, it was so challenging those final weeks of my pregnancy. Every doctor's appointment I would go to alone, there was just new bad news being delivered to me about the restrictions that were being put in place, and I was very depressed. It was a heartbreaking time. You know, those final weeks of my pregnancy, I imagined nesting and being cozy with my husband before we have our first baby, and it was just all kind of ripped away, like so much was during that period of time. So I became really disassociated, I guess, from my pregnancy and the joy that was meant to be coming, and I was just like, if someone had approached me on the street and said, like, we can get that baby out now, I probably would have said, sure. I was really in a place of not caring, I guess, about what happened. I was just so desperate for this baby to be born before the restrictions got worse, before my husband wouldn't be allowed to be at the birth. And so I was, yeah, disassociated, I think is the only way I can describe it. And then, of course, I went overdue because my kids don't come on time. This will be a recurring
Oh,
theme.
first baby
Oh,
also very common, just saying, but a lot of people carry over that 40-week mark.
It's, yeah, it was, they don't tell you that, when you get the handbook at the beginning of the pregnancy. So I was overdue and was, desperate to be induced. And I went into this, prior to the pandemic and everything, being pretty knowledgeable. Like I had attended a birth before. I had seen things, kind of go wrong and had originally had ideas about what I wanted my birth to be like. But at that point, I was just desperate. But the induction started really well. They placed Cervidil. It like kickstarted things like rapid fire. It worked super well for me. And, I thought, okay, this might still be okay. Despite the induction, despite all this might still go fine. Given the COVID-19 restrictions at the time, my husband wasn't allowed in with me until I progressed to a certain degree in my labor.
Wait, what? Not at all until you progress to a certain point?
So around 7 centimeters, they were going to give him a call.
What? What was the difference of you being there at one point versus the
Oh,
other?
it was tragic. So he waited in the car in the parking lot.
Oh, poor thing.
So I was
Both of
alone,
you.
and it was terrible. Like my contractions just came on so super fast because of the Cervidil. I started dilating really quickly, and I thought, okay, they're going to get him in here. It's going to be okay. And and it wasn't. I started to panic. I had not wanted an epidural. But I was obviously experiencing a lot of pain. They got the Cervidil out because of how I was reacting to it. And the nurse asked, if I wanted an epidural. And I said, no, I'm okay for now. I'm coping. And so I waited a while longer and I was still alone. They still hadn't called my husband. And I just couldn't do it alone anymore, So the nurse talked me into the epidural. And I didn't want it, I guess, but I felt, I don't know, I felt a little
Pressured?
pressured. Yeah, pressure, that's the word, And again, in looking back on that, I recognize that a lot of the birthing people on the floor at the time were also alone, and the nurses did what they could in those situations. But yeah, that, I still hold a little bit of resentment, I guess, for those moments where I was my most vulnerable and by myself.
Understandably, like, makes sense.
So I got the epidural. My husband was allowed in shortly after, and things were still okay. I was still progressing fine. And then labor just stalled, which is, the start of many stories. So we waited through the night. At some point, they started Pitocin. I was moving in all these ways. I should say that my doctor is a saint among, humans. She's incredible. And she was on with me all night. She did everything she could. She wasn't on when I first got admitted, but she came on later in the night. And she was phenomenal. She did everything she could to kind of get things going again. And then her shift ended the next day, and somebody else came in. And by that time, I had that pesky old cervical lip. My baby's head was OT. She couldn't make that last, I was 9 centimeters, but she couldn't get that last turn because of the tilt. I was swelling. There was meconium. Her heart rate was doing some wonky things. And off to the OR we went. I was okay with it initially. Like it was, it felt like, okay, this is what happens. And it was fine, really. I had a pleasant cesarean experience. I wasn't nauseous, My husband was able to be there with me for the birth, and I had a lovely surgeon. So it was okay. I felt okay for the most part afterwards. But again, because of the COVID-19 restrictions, my husband was only permitted to stay 2 hours after the birth. So he was asked to leave and not allowed back until we were released. So it was just me and my beautiful baby girl, who was 8 pounds, 9 ounces alone for, 2.5 days after I was just recovering from major surgery. So those first few days were challenging. Breastfeeding was a disaster. I had terrible edema from all the fluids during the C-section. I was huge trying to breastfeed. I was just so puffed up. Everything was impossible. And again, because all the birthing people on the floor were without their partners, the nurses were run ragged. So it was very difficult to receive care, to put it politely. So I think honestly, a lot of the trauma that I have from that time came from my hospital stay afterward and how I was treated or how I felt kind of neglected. I was again alone in some of the most formative, I guess, times of my motherhood experience. So that was that, really. That was my first birth. And as the days kind of progressed and I got home, and I just felt so defeated by and let down, I think, by how I was treated. And not even how I was treated by people, but by the situation. I mean, a lot of it was beyond anyone's control.
Yeah, that time, I have a lot of feelings. I was not a mom birthing, but I was a doula supporting couples and saw a lot of really stupid stuff. Just gonna say that. That didn't make sense at all. But everyone was so restricted and rules were changing literally by the day
So
or even
fast.
by the hour. Right?
The hospital I gave birth at has since, it kind of acknowledged that they took a little too far, like
Yeah, a
laboring
lot of
people
people
shouldn't
have.
be alone, like who would have thought?
Yeah, someone in labor should not feel deserted.
So some of that was, nice to hear, but it's just a little too late for my own benefit. But so the more that all kind of settled with me, and when we had our first baby, we didn't know. I mean, down the road, if we wanted more kids, I'm an only child. I love being an only child. So I thought, maybe a family, of three is fine. But I remember sitting with my doctor at one of our follow-up appointments, and I just broke down by the whole experience. And it's like, I can't do that again, regardless if I want to, I just can't. And she was crushed. She just couldn't let me live with that feeling. If you don't want more kids, great. You don't, you do you, but that can't be how we leave you. So she recommended a therapist to me who has become one of the most dearest people in my life. She's also a doula, and all of her in her therapy practice focuses on birth trauma, infertility, infant loss, things of that nature. And she was a godsend once we decided that, we were ready to have a second baby. And I don't think I could have done any of the rest without her.
We're going to take a quick break to continue talking about fertility. I know many of our beautiful women of strength listening join us right after their cesarean birth. And when you're in your postpartum stages, many of your nutrition needs actually increase. And if you're thinking about having another baby, I invite you to take a moment to educate yourself on the support that our favorite prenatal supplement Needed offers for both fertility and postpartum. When the two founders of Needed began their fertility journey, they were shocked to see the lack of nutrition advice provided. Along with creating an amazing line of prenatal vitamins, omega-3s, and other essentials, they offer eggs quality support for women and sperm support for men. Again, this is not something we often talk about. Male fertility impacts conception and a healthy pregnancy, and it is in decline due to stress, toxins, aging, and other lifestyle factors. Hormone and gut health of your partner directly influences sperm quantity and quality, and ultimately the DNA passed from sperm to baby. I love that Needed not only thinks about the female fertility, but also about the male fertility. Needed does an amazing job thinking about and supporting us women through the fertility journey. They offer prenatals, omega-3s, antioxidant, rich in egg quality support supplements, and it is formulated by prenatal health practitioners to help you and your eggs thrive. You are born with all of your egg cells, or oocytes. And the oocyte takes 3 to 4 months to mature before ovulation. Needed egg quality support is designed to support egg cell health as they develop into mature eggs. Improving egg quality can support fertility outcomes, and it's never too early or too late to focus on egg quality. So we hope you can check out thisisneeded.com and enjoy 20% off with code VBAC20. Again, that is VBAC20 at thisisneeded.com. Back to today's show.
So then moving on, I guess, to my second birth, it took a while to kind of come around to being ready for that after that first experience. There was a lot of therapy, a lot of trying to recognize that what I went through wasn't my own fault. There was nothing, the choices I made, giving in to the epidural, that wasn't a moral failing on my part. Being alone, it wasn't not deserving of care. It was just the situation of the time. So a lot of that took some time to reckon with. And then as I kind of began, I knew right away that I was going to try for the VBAC, and my doctor was, yeah, of course, you want to 100%. She felt because I did labor so well, once we finally got things going, she was pretty confident that things might go okay for me the second time. So she was a great support. But once I kind of started looking into a lot of the, VBAC literature and the VBAC world, there were so many pockets of it that I really struggled with. Some of the language around how we can prepare, which is really off-putting to me. It felt like if you know enough, if you do enough, you'll be okay. And it just felt really focused on blaming people for whatever went wrong the first time. If you had knew more, if you had advocated for yourself more, if you had breathed more or meditated more, things would have gone better. So I really tried to avoid some of that in preparing for my second birth. I was really focused on the things I could control. My doula slash therapist slash friend really helped me with a lot of that. So a lot of what we focused on in, preparing for that second baby was focusing on things that would be true regardless of how that birth happened. So I became really into these kind of series of affirmations that, is not my thing. I'm not a not into that normally, but they became very treasured to me and still kind of are. But I really prioritized creating ones for myself that will be true regardless of what happened, so it wasn't about, birthing my baby vaginally, because that might not happen. I knew that going in. So it was more about acknowledging that, my body is strong and capable. That's true regardless of what happens. So those sort of sentiments really echoed through my whole pregnancy and leading up to the birth. For the most part, I had a pretty uneventful pregnancy, except for the fact that on my 20-week anatomy scan or ultrasound, they discovered that my placenta was low. It was partially covering my cervix. So my doctor was great. She's like, yeah, don't worry about it. It'll move. We're not going to worry about that until we have to. That often happens. We're not going to let that slow us down right now. So that was fine. And then later in my, I guess, third trimester, I was measuring gigantic. I'm a very small person. I'm like barely 5 feet. I'm petite. And I had grow big babies. So I was measuring quite large. So we rescreened for gestational diabetes. And I kind of had a weird borderline response. So I was doing these funny diet things, trying to get that under control. But I was still measuring pretty large. But again, my doctor wasn't really discouraging about that. People have big babies, the bony pelvis, it moves. Don't worry about it. So I still felt pretty good, and I kind of loved the idea of tiny little me having this like huge baby. It seemed like I'd be pretty proud of it. But I had to have a follow-up ultrasound to check on the placement of my placenta to see if it had moved enough. And it ha did, fortunately. It seemed like it was in the clear. And my doctor, who it was lovely, had kind of indicated that, this is not a growth scan. We're just checking the placenta. But of course, the maternal fetal unit like love to check the size of that baby. So of course, he was huge. They were like trying to really, are you sure you still want to do this? Because he's going to be quite a large boy and all that. So I mostly tuned that out. I was like, yeah, I know, no big deal. I know I can't do anything about that. That's not within my control at this point. I'm, 32 weeks pregnant. So we, carried on as normal. At this point, like I was going crazy. I was walking so much. I was seeing the chiropractor. I was doing prenatal yoga. I was curb stepping everywhere. I was like lost my mind a little bit in terms of all the preparation I was trying to do, trying to get everything right. I became super obsessed with the baby's positioning, just knowing positioning had kind of factored into my first birth. I don't think I lied like on my right side for months. Basically, I was just really focused on trying to keep things where they should be, get that baby low and in the right angle. It became a bit of an obsession, but also the thing I look back on in a really positive way. I got really good at feeling where he was, trying to pick out his spine and what way he was facing. And in retrospect, it made me feel a lot closer to him than I had with my daughter in some ways when I was pregnant. I became very in tuned to his movements. So I look back on that and I'm thankful. But yeah, so things were fine. I was growing a big baby, but all seemed well. I felt like I had a great team who supported me and were, progressing the way we wanted to. We kind of expected this baby would also be quote unquote late, just given my first was. So we kind of prepared for that. We had talked about the ways we could induce if needed or how long I wanted to wait until an induction. At the hospital near me, it is standard practice to be automatically booked for an induction 1 week past your due date. That just, you get that letter in the mail regardless of whether you want it or not. So I, you know, as my due date approached, I got that letter. I called my doctor. She canceled that. So that was not our plan. We were going to wait and see. So she was great in terms of kind of letting me make the call, so I'll say. But at a week past, or I guess just a little over, I did have to have a biophysical. That was the kind of condition which for me turning down the induction was to have the biophysical. And my doctor was great. She kind of gave me the heads up that like it's pretty easy to fail these when you're, 41 plus weeks overdue. So she was advocating for me to we're not going to jump the gun here, but it was kind of the requirement of their unit to have that. So I went in for my biophysical, 41 and change. I can't remember the exact day. And lo and behold, we failed. I think we had a 6 out of 10. His heart rate didn't do the right things in the right order or whatever the scoring is, I can't recall. And he also didn't score for seeing the breathing movements. So I knew just from my own reading that, a score of 6 was kind of a gray area-ish, so I wasn't too worried about it. But the staff in the maternal field, like, oh, well, you're having this baby today. I was like, well, no, I'm not. This is not my
Oh, wow.
plan. Yeah, there was, they, and I know they, I mean, they see the worst cases. That is their space. But, I'd already kind of had the conversation with my doctor. So I felt, pretty well informed. So I knew that, I was not ready yet. I also knew that my doctor was on call that day. So I did go up to labor and delivery, which is what they had recommended. And so she did another biophysical up there and then did a third non-stress test. So I also failed the second biophysical, but the non-stress test turned out okay. We seen some time, a bit of walk, some water, and things seemed okay. So I went home and waited for another couple of days. And at this point, we were really cooking. We were looking at 42 weeks. So I did agree to have the induction on a Thursday. I was disappointed that we were going to have the induction. I knew because I forgot to mention this. I wasn't followed by an obstetrician during my pregnancy. I was with a family practice group. We don't have midwives in the area I live, but we do have a family practice group who have delivery privileges, but they can't perform cesareans, obviously. So I was followed by this lovely GP who would have delivered had she had my babies been born vaginally. So because I had to transfer temporarily to the obstetrics unit for the induction, I knew I was going to be kind of encounter some more, I guess, pushback than I had faced to date with my current doctor because she was so lovely and supportive. So I went in kind of prepared for that. And the OB on that day of my induction was quite, I don't know how to put it politely. He was very blunt. I don't think he thought I was an overly smart person to be, looking at 42 weeks, still insisting on trying to have this very large baby vaginally. But he, to his credit, I guess, respected my autonomy enough to be like, yeah, sure, we'll give it a shot. I think it's the wrong call, but it's your call to make. So I have a love-hate relationship with him to some extent. So they did another non-stress test and things looked okay. And then I think he left and a resident came in to start the induction. I was a little dilated, so they were going to try the Foley, which they had initially some trouble getting in, and it was the worst pain I've ever been in. Like, didn't compare at all to labor on my first, but that Foley was like, whew. And as soon as the resident got it in, all hell broke loose. My husband was kind of by my shoulder, just turned white as a ghost. The resident looks up and she's like, I think that's a little more blood than we would expect. And meanwhile, I can just see it pouring onto her shoes. I'm just hemorrhaging. I'm
Whoa.
just hemorrhaging. So she runs out. There's a nurse there trying to mop things up, while kind of still holding whatever sort of contraption they use to get the Foley in. The OB comes in with an ultrasound machine. They're, of course, fearing it's my placenta is beginning to rupture or whatever. So while he's checking the ultrasound, the heart rate monitor just plummets. The baby's heart rate drops into like the 60s. The room
Scary.
fills with people. And I'm petrified. I'm just shocked. The OB is trying to like move me and trying to get the Foley out. And after, it felt like an hour. I'm sure it was only a minute that the heart rate recovers. But the decision is made. Like, we're going to the OR. They didn't know what the source of the bleeding was. I was still hemorrhaging. I asked the OB, like, can I just talk to my husband for a minute? And he said, no, like, we don't have time. We're going. So we go to the OR, and it's a really quick. It was so much faster than my first birth, and I don't even think the terror really caught on to me until later, like when they finally gave me the baby and the OBs, ensured me, oh yeah, no, like he wasn't without oxygen for any extent. He's checked out okay. He's fine. And I'm not sure it had hit me that that was ever in doubt, that that could have gone away, that he wouldn't have been fine. So it was a lot. It was a lot. It was, oh my gosh. To say it wasn't what we expected would be an understatement. And to say I didn't get my VBAC is an understatement, because it just became a conversation of so many greater things. Fortunately, my doctor happened to be in the hospital, and she kind of took care of us. So we only stayed there for a day. Fortunately, that was the main thing on my birth plan, regardless of what happened, was to get me out of the hospital as quickly as possible. So we were released the next day. The baby was fine, and I was fine. So we were all healthy. There was no great source of the bleeding outside of that they suspected that my placenta was still a little too low compared to how it showed on the scans in my third trimester. So when they inserted the Foley, things shifted enough that it tore a teensy bit or something, and hence the blood, but not enough to cause damage to me or my son. But that the proximity of my placenta to my cervix wasn't quite clear on that ultrasound in my third trimester. So yeah, that's my birth story. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Births sometimes can unfold in those really wonky, unexpected ways. And like, I have questions too. I'm like, could they have torn your cervix from placing the Foley? Could the Foley have nicked your placenta if it was too low inside, right? There's all of these questions, and we tend to go that way, wanting to know the answers. But sometimes we just don't know the answer. And we've talked about this a long time ago in our radical acceptance. Julie and I did a radical acceptance episode, which if you haven't checked that episode out, I really highly suggest listeners check it out, because sometimes there is not an answer, or the answer is unknown and it will remain unknown. And sometimes not knowing the answer can consume us, and it can leave the trauma, the doubt, the fear, and all the feelings, right, that comes with. And sometimes that means we have to let it go. We're not getting the answer. We're just not getting the answer. And letting it go helps us grow, helps us heal, helps us move on to that next stage. And when I say move on, I don't mean just ignore it, wipe it out, it never happened. It's accept that it happened. It's accept that, where we were then is where we were. We made the decisions we made with the information that we were given. And now we're moving on, right? You did the best thing you could do for your baby by saying, like, okay, yeah, let's, and then, and like you said, like, it didn't even happen or occur to you until later that, like, wait, my baby couldn't have been okay. Like, so that I'm sure sat really
Oh my gosh,
heavy.
yeah, hugely, right? It all happened so quickly. There was so much blood. Like, again, you're on your back, right? You can't really see well, but like when you see it just on, as the resident leaves the room, it's on her shoes. Like, I'm not okay.
Which is not
Something is up. There's a
right.
problem there right now, right? Yeah, and my son was big. He was 9 pounds, 15 ounces. I don't think, his size had anything to do with this part of the conversation, but in my mind, I think I've somehow accepted that. I think he was going to be born via cesarean, kind of regardless of what happened in my first birth. Maybe my placenta was low right from the start. That was a known thing that I was going to deal with, C-section or not. I know there's obviously some evidence to show that the way placenta can, attach can be influenced by previous C-section scars, of course. But I think that's how it's been. I think that's how I've been able to kind of make peace with a lot of that it was just always going to be this way for him. I don't know. I felt less, because I was empowered through some of the decisions I made, because I felt genuinely supported by the people around me, except for maybe that kind of cranky OB, besides him. It's much easier to come to terms with what happened. And in a lot of ways, even though you know, my second birth is the much scarier of the two situations. I don't have nearly as much trauma associated with it. You know,
Yeah.
it was a crappy birth. So I'll be frank about it, but you know, it is what it is. But it was scary, but it's not what keeps me up at night sometimes still. You know, that first birth where I felt disempowered and disenfranchised and ignored and neglected, that is the, you know, the lasting problem. And while I've done a lot to
Yeah.
overcome that, I think it just goes to show, you know, how we treat people in these moments can really have a lasting impact. It's not just about the physical pain, the physical trauma,
Yes.
the health emergencies that cause trauma. It can be a lot of the emotional harm as well.
I love that you pointed that out. And, you mentioned this along the way, some of your prep, how you're like, I am not the affirmation type. It's not my thing. I don't connect to it. But you did. And I think affirmations are so powerful, whether or not you are an affirmation person or not. I really think having those on your side can be impactful. And like you said, you're like, I still kind of like hold on to them and
I
cherish them
do.
today.
I really do. I have a list of them on my notes app on my phone. They're the same ones, you know, they're the ones I wrote when I was pregnant with my second baby. And, you know, sometimes I'm kind of just having a bit of a bad day, or when, you know, you know, when you see another one of those photos that, you know, like the people you referenced earlier who don't associate with the VBAC groups anymore, and they don't see themselves, you know, every now and then when a photo of a super strong, awesome person with their fist up in the air, you know, with their celebrating their
Yeah.
VBAC, you know, right, some one of those will just hit me the wrong way one day, right? And I'll go back to those affirmations and remind myself that, you know, no, my body is strong and accomplished and, you know, like, or whatever I need to hear that day. And they do have a lot lasting impact. Another one that got me through a lot was, I'm strong enough to face what comes, whatever that is.
Strong enough to face what comes. I love that.
So yeah, it's been a bit of a journey. My kids are 4 and 2 now. We're not sure if we're done,
Yeah.
but I you know, despite all of these, I guess, experiences, I would still 100% go for another VBAC.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you that too. Like, do you feel at this point that you would rather just do cesareans? Would you have said, looking back, I just wish I would have scheduled it at 40 weeks,
Oh.
or are you feeling pretty content and empowered with the choices that you made?
That's a great question, and I think about it a lot. I'm fairly positive I wouldn't just schedule the C-section, and partially because, you know, despite being alone for part of my labor with my first during my first birth, I kind of loved labor. Like, I don't think I, you know, before I got the epidural, I have never felt so strong and so awesome in my whole entire life, right? I was like, you know, I am woman, hear me roar. And maybe that is just in retrospect, but I also, like, I have a couple selfies from that, from those few hours, and I'm enjoying a lot of it. So, you know, preparing for my second birth, even, you know, knowing that, you know, maybe this will end up in a C-section, I kept thinking, oh, well, at least I'll get to labor again. I'll have that. That will be
Yeah.
great. And I didn't, you know, I didn't get any of that. So, you know, I'm not turned away from that. I'd be very much open to trying again. I do think if we were to have another, I would not do all the things. I became so obsessed with making sure I was getting like 12,000 steps or whatever it was, and the curb walking and the squats. I did so many squats and I ate so many dates. Like, I would just let go of a lot of that, you know, because I think a lot of that was the pressure of, you know, you need to do everything you can to get this right. And I don't have that pressure on me anymore. Maybe it's because I'm older than I was then, or because I, you know, maybe foolishly think I know a little more, but I think I would just, let's just try. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about that. You talked about like you did things that you could control, but then you also focused on how you kind of went down that path of, I call it obsession, the path of
Yes,
obsession.
it
I
was.
was once on the path of obsession as well with my second, my cesarean, so my CBAC, my second that I wanted to be back that went cesarean. I ate the dates, I drank the tea, I did all the things too. And then it didn't unfold exactly how I wanted it. And I don't think the things that I did or the things that I didn't do is, as far as the prep goes, really impacted as much as I didn't choose the right provider. But with my second, I kind of let go of some of the things, but then hyper obsessed with some of the other things. Like, I didn't sit on a couch for 9 months. I sat in a car really straight,
Upright.
really straight up, with paying attention to my sway back and my pelvis. And, but I did the things that I could control that felt right for me. I went to a chiropractor. That made me feel better. I was like, all I can do is go and hope for the best, right? I drank my tea. I let go of the dates. I couldn't eat another date for a very long time. I do now. I actually add them to like oatmeal and things, but I couldn't even stomach a date. So there were things that I did and I didn't do. So try not to go down the path of obsession, because I think sometimes it takes away from our pregnancy. Do all the things that you can do within your control that feels right. So eat well, hydrate well, get a good prenatal. Process your birth, process your past birth. Know what you want. Hire a doula if you want a doula. Like, find your right supportive provider. But also, if it's too much and you need to be like, you know what? I'm gonna do what I can over here, and I'm just gonna let it unfold over here. I don't think there's any shame in that. I don't
No.
think anyone should be like, well, but you're not doing XYZ. Yeah, I'm not, because right now it doesn't feel
It
right
doesn't feel
for
right.
me.
That's exactly right. I think I was just so afraid of, if my birth didn't go well, if I would think that, oh, there's something else I could have tried, And that was, I think, my mindset preparing for that second birth. But I'm glad you mentioned like the feeling right, because I did actually give up the acupuncture, I think, at like give it up at 40 weeks. I was due, because I hated it. I hated going. I didn't like the way it made me feel. It made me groggy. I
See?
felt like I was sleepwalking.
So not right.
Not right. But yeah, so letting that go. But again, initially I felt like guilty for it almost. Like, I'm not doing everything I could. But, sometimes we need to let that go if it doesn't feel right for us.
Yeah, I agree. So really quickly to wrap this up, we ask for a secret lesson and then we ask for your tips. And I wanted to read what you wrote. When I said, what is a secret lesson or something no one really talks about that you wish that you would have known ahead of time when preparing for birth? Your answer was, birth stays with you forever. It's not something you just move on from. Like we were just saying, like it isn't. It's not just something like you move on and oh, you forget about it. It's just gone. It's not. It really does stick with you, and it can impact future births. So know that that's a thing, and you need to work through that if you have trauma. She says, my first birth was nearly 5 years ago, and the trauma still barrels over her. Likewise, the pride that you feel and how you advocated for yourself during your second birth continuously gives you strength. So I love that secret lesson. I think it's very empowering. And then when I asked, what is your best tip for someone preparing for a VBAC? There's a lot here, and I'm just going to read exactly what you wrote because so it's all so good. And you also kind of talked about it within your story, but I just wanted to write what you wrote. It says, preparing for a baby and birth is a mental, emotional, and cognitive journey, not just physical. I did so much work with the support of a wonderful doctor, doula, therapist, and partner. That all helped me cope with this birth. I did chiropractic care, pelvic floor PT, acupuncture, yoga, massage, but it was the mental work and preparation that I did that really made the difference. And then you said, if someone is into affirmations, find or create some that will be true regardless of whatever happens. Again, pointing out what you said earlier. I think it's important to note, women of strength, you can prep. You can do everything. And sometimes when I think we do everything and then they don't unfold exactly how we think we did everything and it sucked, it failed me, right? It's not true. You did everything that felt right with you, for you, and you have to embrace that and congratulate yourself for that and say, I did what I could. But I love that you talked about the affirmations that can stay true. I love that so much. Your body is strong. You guys, no matter how you birth your baby, your body is strong, right? Okay, so there's something that you did through therapy and healing that I would love to talk on before we go. Is there any way you could dive into that a little bit?
So it's a practice called birth story medicine. I don't, I'm not an expert in it by any means, but it is the, I guess, train of schooling that my therapist, who's also a doula, kind of specializes in with, birthing people who have birth trauma. And it's really a part of the birth story listening. So having someone kind of reciprocate in the kind of dialogue of your birth story, really similar to what goes on in this podcast in a lot of ways, where being heard when you tell your birth story. But through that process over, months and months of the telling and retelling of my birth story, particularly that first birth, my therapist was able to really help me get to a place of re-seeing it. And that's when I kind of began to re-see my role in that. And it really centers around this idea that, through discussion, through sharing, that can be the medicine we need to kind of heal emotionally. So it's again not always about those, physical scars we're left with, but emotionally what we kind of carry and giving value to those, having those be heard in a space where they're not often heard. When we go into a hospital or a birth center, we don't always create space or are not always given the space to have those feelings and that trauma heard. And that birth story medicine approach really helped me re-see my experience for my first birth.
I love that you talk about this. We actually have something similar in our VBAC course when it comes to mental and physical prep, because I think that's honestly where our course starts, is mental and physical prep, because I truly believe that's where this journey starts. But I talk about the senses, right? So when we are processing our birth and or going through this birth medicine journey, I suggest doing things where you write your birth story, physically write it, read it, so you're seeing it. Okay, so you're physically doing the action. Now you're seeing it and you're reading it. Okay, read it out loud to someone. So you're hearing it being said and someone else is hearing it. Receive validation. Okay. And really, I'm really walk through those five senses, because I truly believe that it helps you heal. But hearing it, seeing it, writing it, being validated. We can't, I guess it's not even the five senses. We can't smell our birth. But we talk about that, like taking yourself back, putting yourself in that, like feeling, hearing those sounds, smelling the smells, and like processing those is so empowering. So kind of, I mean, a little different, but kind of similar. And I love it. I love that so much. Birth medicine, is that what you're calling it?
Birth story medicine. It's
Birth
I can't
story
there's I
medicine.
can't remember the woman who, kind of wrote the book quite literally on it.
Okay,
But I
I'm gonna find
recommend
it.
everyone check it out.
Gonna find it, put it in the show notes. Birth story medicine. Here we go. Okay, really quickly before we go, will you give us two or three affirmations that really stuck with you if you have them? If not, no worries.
Oh, sure, I still do. So one that was I don't hold on to as much now, but it was really important to me leading up to that second birth, especially given my first, was I am not responsible for starting labor. Labor will start when it starts, right? I tried, but I had to remind myself I am not responsible for starting labor. Another one was my baby will be born. I will birth my baby. However that
Love that one.
happens, I will birth my baby. And the final one maybe that I think again I think because of the trauma I had from my first birth during the pandemic was I am not alone. My baby is with me.
Love those so much.
Oh no, I'm
So
very
empowering.
emotional.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did not mean to make you emotional, but I thank you so much for all of those and for your words. And I am so happy that you were able to come through on the other side of this experience with the mindset that you have. I know it's not easy. I know it hasn't been easy. The journey is really a journey. And like you said, it sticks with you forever. Like, I will never forget all three of my births. And as of the day of this very recording, my daughter turned 13 yesterday. My first C-section was 13 years ago yesterday. And let me tell you, I reflected deeply. I had a lot of emotions. I cried. I smiled. I saw so many feelings that it like literally makes me emotional thinking about it right now. But you guys, I was amazing back then. Like, I didn't fail. I didn't fail. And I think that's just so important that we know that, like, no matter how our baby's born, like, we're going to be with our babies will be with us, and we didn't fail. Like, we did the best we could, and you were incredible.
Thanks, Megan. You too.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.